What if understanding analytics could transform how we make decisions? In this session, we will explore the fascinating world of data analytics, unraveling its power and practical applications. By diving into this topic, you will gain insights that will help you tackle real-world business challenges effectively. Join us as we uncover the secrets behind making data-driven choices for success. In this chapter, our focus will be on understanding the four types of analytics. We'll begin by exploring descriptive analytics, which allows us to summarize past events using key statistical measures. Next, we will delve into diagnostic analytics, where we'll analyze various techniques to uncover the root causes of trends and anomalies. Following that, we will evaluate predictive analytics models, learning how to forecast outcomes and support informed decision-making. Finally, we will explore prescriptive analytics applications to recommend optimal actions by integrating insights from both descriptive and predictive analytics. By the end of this session, you will have a comprehensive understanding of how these analytics types work together to drive business success. Let's delve into the essential analytics models that shape our understanding of data. First, we have descriptive analytics, which answers the core question, what happened and what is happening now. This model summarizes past and current data, giving us valuable hindsight. Next up is diagnostic analytics, posing the question, why did it happen? This approach explores historical data to uncover the root causes and drivers of events. Moving forward, predictive analytics prompts us to consider what will likely happen next. By leveraging patterns and prior findings, it helps forecast future outcomes. Finally, prescriptive analytics guides us by asking what should be done. This model recommends the best actions to take, building on insights gleaned from predictions. Together, these analytics types provide a comprehensive framework for interpreting data and informing decisions. Now for something important, let's discuss key analytics methods that help businesses understand their data. First up, we focus on common methods, where observations, case studies, and surveys serve as the backbone for collecting and organizing past event data, along with current status facts. Moving on, we explore the tools of the trade, highlighting how statistical packages and Excel enable teams to efficiently aggregate, clean, and tabulate large datasets, making data management more effective. Finally, we summarize past events by reporting on aspects such as territorial customer additions or attrition, sales volumes, and the outcomes of marketing campaigns. These insights create a clear picture of historical performance, aiding in strategic decision-making. Emphasizing these methods and tools enhances our analytical capabilities and prepares us for future initiatives. Let's examine the analytic model to better understand its practical applications. First, we have social media tabulation, which allows us to track and compare metrics like Facebook likes, tweets, and followers. This method is essential for gauging engagement over time and refining our outreach strategies. Next, we turn to administrative reporting, where routine summaries encompass sales, marketing results, financial data, operations performance, and milestone tracking. This structured reporting ensures we keep our operations aligned with our goals. Following that, we explore investment analysis use, enabling advisors and brokers to review portfolio performance while identifying areas ripe for improvement. Finally, we conclude with descriptive statistics outputs, delivering clear summaries that include mean, median, mode, and variability measures like range, interquartile range, and standard deviation. These outputs transform raw data into decision-ready insights, guiding our future strategies effectively. Let's break down the concept of descriptive statistics, focusing on three essential components. First, we consider central tendency, which identifies the center or typical value of a dataset through measures such as mean, median, and mode. Next, we explore variability or spread. This aspect assesses how dispersed the data are around the central point, using measures like range, variance, standard deviation, skewness, and kurtosis. Lastly, we examine frequency distribution, which shows how often values occur across different categories or bins, highlighting counts and relative occurrences. Together, these elements provide a comprehensive way to summarize data, turning raw numbers into valuable insights for informed decision-making. Let's unpack the concept of the mean, a fundamental measure of central tendency in statistics. The mean represents the average value, providing insight into the central tendency of a numerical data set. To compute the mean, simply add all the response values together and divide by n, which is the total number of observations. For example, consider the dataset including values such as 15, 3, 12, 0, 24, and 6. The sum of these values is 60, and since there are 6 observations, the mean is calculated as 60 divided by 6, resulting in a mean of 10. It's important to note that the mean is particularly suitable when our data is numerical, specifically in interval or ratio scales, and the distribution of values is roughly symmetric without extreme outliers that could skew our understanding. In our exploration of the analytic model, let's break down the process of finding the median. First, we need to order the data by arranging the values from smallest to largest, 0, 3, 3, 12, 15, and 24. Next, with 6 observations in total, we must locate the middle positions, which are the 3rd and 4th values, 3 and 12. Now, to find the median, we average these 2 middle values by computing 3 plus 12 divided by 2, resulting in 7.5. Finally, we can interpret this result. The median indicates that half of the observations lie at or below 7.5, while the other half are at or above. It's also noteworthy that the median is less sensitive to outliers compared to the mean, making it a robust measure of central tendency in our analysis. Let me show you how we interpret the mode in our data analysis. The mode represents the value or values that appear most frequently within a dataset. It's essential to recognize that a dataset can have no mode, or it can be classified as unimodal, bimodal, trimodal, or multimodal, depending on how many numbers share the highest frequency. When it comes to finding the mode in numerical data, the process begins by sorting values from low to high. After that, we identify the number that appears most often, ensuring our analysis captures the essence of the dataset's frequency distribution. Understanding modes helps us reveal significant patterns and insights within our data, ultimately enriching our analytic journey. Let's break down how to find the mode in categorical data. First, you group the data by category and tally the counts to pinpoint the category with the highest frequency. This method is particularly useful, especially for categorical and ordinal data, as it highlights the most common category or rank among the options. For instance, suppose you want to determine the most frequently chosen color from a selection of options. To illustrate further, consider some quick examples. In a numerical data set like 2, 2, 3, 4, 4, 4, and 5, the mode would be 4. In a categorical data set of colors such as blue, blue, and red, the mode clearly is blue. Understanding these examples equips us with the insight needed to analyze categorical data effectively. In this section, we will cover the descriptive statistics in a frequency table focusing on parents' education level. First, we categorize the data by highlighting each unique education level. The categories we identified include bachelor's degree, master's degree, high school diploma, and doctoral degree. Next, we tally the frequencies, noting that bachelor's and master's degrees each had 2 occurrences, while the high school diploma and doctoral degree each appeared once. This results in a frequency table that illustrates our findings clearly. With 2 categories tied for the highest frequency, we conclude that the data is bimodal, indicating that both bachelor's and master's degrees are the modes. Such a frequency table enables quick analysis and understanding of the data at a glance. Now, Let's explore the example of a group dataset in descriptive statistics. We have organized the reaction times into intervals ranging from 200 to 799 milliseconds, presenting them in a frequency table. For instance, the interval of 200 to 299 milliseconds has a frequency of 3, while the interval 300 to 399 milliseconds shows a higher frequency of 7. Continuing with this pattern, we see that the interval 400 to 499 milliseconds has 12 occurrences. The most notable interval is 500 to 599 milliseconds, which has the highest frequency at 18. However, we must exercise caution. Altering the class boundaries could impact which interval becomes modal, thus affecting any mode calculations. Grouped frequency tables like this one allow us to summarize data distributions quickly, but keep in mind that the design of our intervals could skew our statistical insights. Let's turn our attention to measurement levels and their significance in summarizing data. We begin with nominal level data, which focuses on categorization. At this level, we can only assign labels, and thus summaries like frequencies, proportions, and the mode are applicable. Moving on to ordinal level data, we can categorize as well as rank, even though the intervals between rankings are not equal. This allows us to use the median, percentiles, and interquartile range, along with frequencies for summaries. Next, interval level data introduces equal spacing among values, though there is no true zero point, making the differences meaningful. Here, we can use measures such as the mean, standard deviation, and range, alongside the median or mode. Finally, we explore ratio data, which retains all the properties of interval data, but includes a true zero. This means ratios and rates become meaningful, and all interval level summaries can be applied. It's essential to align our descriptive statistics with the appropriate measurement level for accurate representation. Let's break down the various levels of measurement, as illustrated with practical examples. First, we have nominal data, which includes categories such as the city of birth, gender, or car brands. At this level, data is simply labeled without any inherent order, so we can determine modes, but not meaningful averages. Next, we encounter ordinal data, where there's a clear ranking system, like the top 5 Olympic medalists or levels of language ability. While we can use median and percentile figures here, the gaps between ranks aren't necessarily uniform. Following that, interval data, think about test scores or temperature, has equal intervals, which allows us to compare differences, but remember, zero doesn't represent a true absence. Lastly, we reach ratio data, such as height or age, which features a true zero point. This enables us to make valid ratio comparisons, where saying someone is twice as tall is meaningful. Understanding these distinctions is crucial for appropriate data analysis and interpretation. A key concept here is understanding variability in data analysis. Variability, also known as spread or dispersion, provides insight into how far data points lie from one another and from the center. To capture variability, the range is the simplest measure, calculated by finding the difference between the highest and lowest values. For a more nuanced understanding, the interquartile range, or IQR, examines the middle 50% of the data, effectively minimizing the influence of outliers. Next, we have standard deviation, which tells us about the average distance of data points from the mean, providing a clear view of typical spread around that center point. Finally, variance serves as the foundation for standard deviation, as it averages the squared distances from the mean and highlights the overall scatter present in the data set. Together, these concepts equip us with powerful tools to analyze and interpret data effectively. Let's turn our attention to the concept of variability, which describes spread within data. It's essential to understand that variability indicates how far observations straggle from one another and from their center, enhancing our grasp of measures like mean, median, and mode. A crucial insight is that lower variability strengthens the generalization strength of our sample, making it a more accurate representation of the population and boosting our confidence in conclusions drawn. In terms of prediction reliability, a tighter spread leads to narrower and more dependable forecasts, whereas a wider spread introduces uncertainty and escalates risk. It's also vital to recognize that different data sets can share the same center but exhibit vastly different levels of risk, resulting in different decisions and outcomes. To measure spread adequately, we should use the range for quick assessments, the interquartile range to resist the influence of outliers, and standard deviation to understand overall dispersion. This comprehensive approach enables us to interpret data effectively and make informed decisions. Understanding the concept of range is vital in grasping data variability. Range measures how spread out values are calculated as the difference between the highest value and the lowest value. In our sample A of 4 news minutes, the highest value is 324 and the lowest is 72. Thus, we compute the range by subtracting these two. 324 minus 72 gives us 252 minutes. This indicates that the total span of time recorded for phone usage is 252 minutes. However, it's important to recognize that because the range relies solely on these two extreme values, it can be sensitive to outliers and may not accurately represent the overall distribution shape. Therefore, for a clearer picture of variability, it's advisable to combine the range with other measures like interquartile range and standard deviation. Let's unpack the concept of interquartile range, often referred to as IQR. It measures the spread of the middle 50% of values within an ordered dataset. It isolates the central half by identifying the quartiles, Q1 at the 25th percentile, Q2 as the median at the 50th, and Q3 at the 75th percentile. This focus on the middle segment means that IQR remains robust and stable in the presence of outliers, unlike other measures. When compared to range, which considers the minimum and maximum values, IQR uses only Q1 and Q3. This characteristic makes it a reliable tool for measuring variability, applicable for both skewed and normal distributions. Let's break down an example of calculating the interquartile range, or IQR, using 8 ordered phone use values. First, it's essential to confirm the dataset size, ensuring the values are arranged from smallest to largest. This organization guarantees that the percentile positions align accurately with our data points. Here, n equals 8. Next, we look for the first quartile, known as Q1, which represents the 25th percentile. To find its position, we multiply n by 0.25. which gives us Q1's position as the second value in our ordered list. Similarly, we find the third quartile, or Q3, at the 75th percentile by multiplying n by 0.75, identifying it as the sixth value. Now, knowing that Q1 is the second value, which is 110, and Q3 is the sixth value, which is 287, we can compute the interquartile range. The IQR is derived by subtracting Q1 from Q3, therefore, 287 minus 110 equals 177 minutes. This calculation highlights the spread of the middle half of our usage data, allowing us to analyze typical patterns without the influence of outliers. Let's unpack the dynamics of standard deviation in this chapter. First, we understand that a lower standard deviation indicates that values cluster closely around the mean, while a higher standard deviation signifies that values are more spread out. This concept directly links to the shape of the distribution. A lower standard deviation results in a taller, narrower peak, whereas a higher standard deviation creates a flatter, wider curve. Interestingly, two groups can share the same mean yet differ significantly in their standard deviations, leading to distinct curve characteristics in terms of width and height. In practical terms, consider Group A, which exhibits a lower standard deviation with more consistent outcomes, compared to Group B, which shows higher variability and more erratic results. This comparison sheds light on how standard deviation can inform our understanding of data patterns in real-world applications. In this part, let's break down the core concepts surrounding standard deviation and its implications. First, we learn that about 68% of values fall within one standard deviation from the mean. This means that when you understand the mean and standard deviation, you can anticipate where most observations should cluster. Next, as we extend this understanding, around 95% of values lie within two standard deviations from the mean. This indicates that the vast majority of data can be captured just by looking a little further out. Now, if we look even broader, approximately 99.7% of all values reside within three standard deviations. This gives us confidence that nearly all observations are covered by these intervals when our data follows a normal distribution. Practically, this allows you to predict ranges effectively using the mean plus or minus a multiple of the standard deviation, particularly useful when the normality of the data is plausible. Lastly, we've got to consider spotting outliers, as values that fall outside of three standard deviations are rare and warrant further investigation. This critical insight helps ensure the integrity of our analysis is maintained. Let's turn our attention to the fascinating world of descriptive statistics through some illustrative examples. First up, we see that about 68% of scores fall within one standard deviation from the mean, specifically between 40 and 60. This insight highlights how most observations cluster around the average, making it easier to gauge typical performance. Moving outward, approximately 95% of scores lie within two standard deviations, ranging from 30 to 70. This broader interval encompasses nearly all data, allowing us to understand the overall distribution effectively. Lastly, we discover that about 99.7% of scores fall between 20 and 80, showcasing the extensive coverage when considering three standard deviations. However, it's essential to exercise caution when analyzing non-normal data. In these cases, combining the standard deviation with the range or interquartile range can provide a more reliable picture of spread. In this section, we will cover the fundamental steps for calculating the sample standard deviation. First, we find the mean or average of our scores. This central value serves as the foundation for our analysis. Next, we compute the deviations, which involves subtracting the mean from each score. This process helps us understand how far each score is from the mean, giving us insight into the spread of our data. Finally, we square each deviation to ensure that all values are positive and that larger disparities have a greater impact on our calculations. This method allows us to accurately assess variability in our dataset, setting the stage for further statistical analysis. In this section, we will walk through the essential steps for understanding variance and standard deviation. First, we calculate the sum of squares, which entails adding all the squared deviations. This total captures the overall spread within our dataset. Moving on, we find the sample variance by dividing the sum of squares by n minus 1. This adjustment accounts for the degrees of freedom, leading us to the average squared deviation in our sample. Finally, we take the square root of the variance to derive the standard deviation, returning our measure back to the original units. This process not only clarifies variability, but also strengthens our foundational understanding of statistical analysis. Let's unpack how to find the mean in our dataset. We start by identifying our data values and confirming that we have 6 observations. The numbers are 46, 69, 32, 60, 52, and 41, which gives us a sample size of 6. Next, we add all these observations together to calculate the total sum, resulting in 300. Now, to find the sample mean, we divide this total sum by the sample size. 300 divided by 6 gives us a mean of 50. This mean serves as our baseline, and it will be essential for calculating deviations from this central value. Each deviation will be computed as the score minus the mean, which sets us up for the next analytical steps. Next up, let's dive into computing the deviations from the mean score of 50. We begin with the score of 46, where subtracting 50 results in a deviation of negative 4. Moving on, the score of 69 translates to a positive deviation of 19. For the score of 32, we see a deviation of negative 18, while the score of 60 gives us a positive deviation of 10. Then for the score of 52, the deviation is a small positive 2. Lastly, the score of 41 leads to a negative deviation of 9. These deviations, both positive and negative, are crucial as they help us understand how each score relates to the mean, revealing important insights about variability in our data set. In this segment, we will explore how to handle deviations from the mean. First, recall the deviations we previously calculated, negative 4, 19, negative 18, 10, 2, and negative 9. Next, we will square each of these deviations to eliminate the negative signs and emphasize their magnitude. This gives us a set of squared values, 16 from negative 4, 361 from 19, 324 from negative 18, 100 from 10, 4 from 2, and 81 from negative 9. Now these squared deviations are critical to our analysis, as they help us capture the essence of the spread in our data. Lastly, this process of squaring the deviations not only avoids any confusion with negative signs, but it also highlights the larger deviations more robustly, revealing an uneven distribution of the scores around the mean. Let's break down our next steps in understanding the sum of squares, or SS. First, we will compute SS from the squared deviations. If we add the values of 16, 361, 324, 104, and 81, we arrive at a total of 886. This total represents our sum of squares. Now let's explore what SS actually signifies in statistical terms. SS measures the total variability around the mean. Thus, a larger SS indicates a greater spread within the data. Finally, regarding variance, remember that SS is crucial, as it serves as the numerator in the variance formula, which is scaled by either the population size or the sample size, ensuring accurate representation of variability. In this segment, we'll focus on finding the variance from our sample data. First, we have a sample size of 6, and we've computed the sum of squares, which stands at 886. To ensure our calculations are correct for a sample, we need to apply Bessel's correction. This means we divide the sum of squares by n minus 1, instead of n, to avoid underestimating the true variability. By performing this calculation, we find that 886 divided by 5 equals 177.2, which approximates to 177.26 when rounded. This variance value essentially represents the average square deviation of the sample scores from the mean, giving us an insight into the spread of our data. Let's explore the next step in understanding our descriptive statistics, calculating the standard deviation. To achieve this, we need to take the square root of our previously calculated variance. This process will help us transition from squared units back to our original units, making the data more interpretable. With the variance being 177.2, we find that the standard deviation is approximately 13.31. This means that on average, the scores deviate from the mean by about 13.31 points. It's essential to note that for reporting purposes, we should round the standard deviation to 2 decimal places, unless greater precision is required, ensuring our findings are both accessible and clear. Understanding the relationship between variance and standard deviation is crucial in descriptive statistics. First, let's discuss variance, which represents the average of squared deviations from the mean. This method emphasizes larger departures more strongly, meaning that data sets with outliers will indicate a significantly higher variance. Next, we move to standard deviation, a valuable measure that is the square root of variance. By converting the variance back to the original data's units, standard deviation provides a more intuitive grasp of dispersion. Choosing standard deviation over mean absolute deviation is particularly relevant because it is sensitive to uneven spreads. The squaring process amplifies larger gaps, making standard deviation a better reflection of the data's variability. Finally, a higher standard deviation not only signals greater overall spread, but also suggests more uneven dispersion across the data points, a critical insight for any data analysis. Let's unpack the concept of skewness, particularly focusing on the direction of the tail in a distribution. Skewness signifies the asymmetry of a dataset. It tells us if a distribution stretches further to one side than the other. Now, when we encounter a positive skew, or a right-tailed distribution, we observe a long tail extending to the right. In this case, the mean is positioned to the right of the median, which means the mean is greater than the median. Conversely, in a negative skew, or left-tailed distribution, we see a long tail on the left side. Here, the median is actually greater than the mean, indicating that the median exceeds the mean. Understanding these variations in skewness can significantly enhance our ability to interpret data effectively. Let's turn our attention to the concept of kurtosis, which helps us understand the peakedness and tail behavior of a distribution compared to a normal curve, known as mesokurtic. When delving into kurtosis, we can categorize data into two main types, leptokurtic and platykurtic. Leptokurtic distributions exhibit a sharper peak and heavier tails, indicating a higher likelihood of extreme values than what we observe in mesokurtic distributions. In contrast, a platykurtic distribution features a flatter peak and lighter tails, suggesting there are fewer extreme values compared to the normal baseline. Understanding these distinctions is crucial as skew and kurtosis guide our decisions on whether to use the mean or median in our analyses, ultimately enhancing our interpretations and insights drawn from the data. This knowledge empowers us to make better comparisons and understand the behavior of datasets beyond mere variability. Let's unpack the tools for univariate quantitative analysis. First, if you need to estimate a frequency distribution, a frequency table is essential. It helps you visualize the counts by value or bin, revealing how your data is distributed. Next, when measuring central tendency, consider using the mean, median, and mode. These metrics provide you with the typical or most representative value of your data. Now, to measure dispersion, tools like range, variance, standard deviation, and quartiles are important. They give insight into the overall spread and relative variability of your data set. We also need to characterize the shape of the distribution. This can be achieved through skewness and kurtosis, along with histograms that illustrate the asymmetry and tail heaviness. Additionally, assessing the distribution fit is crucial. A probability plot can help you visualize the closeness of your data to a target distribution, such as a normal distribution. Moving on to position within a sample, employing quantiles or percentiles allows you to determine the rank-based location of an observation, which can reveal thresholds in your analysis. Lastly, for detecting extreme values or outliers, tools like box plots and scatter or strip plots are invaluable. They help identify unusual or influential observations in your data. In this section, we will cover key assessment tools for evaluating the relationship between quantitative variables. First, it's crucial to measure the direction and strength of the association between two numeric variables. This foundational understanding sets the stage for deeper analysis. Next, we utilize the correlation coefficient, denoted as R. This numerical tool summarizes linear associations on a scale, from negative 1 to positive 1, where values close to 0 suggest little linear relationship. Lastly, we turn to the scatter plot as a visual tool. By plotting one variable against another, we can easily observe trends, outliers, and clusters, while also potentially highlighting any non-linearity in the data. Thus, these tools collectively enhance our analytic capabilities in understanding variable relationships. In this section, we will explore a powerful visual tool that enhances our analysis, the correlation map or heat map. This tool allows us to scan numerous variables simultaneously, enabling us to quickly identify strong positive or negative relationships through variations in color intensity. A practical illustration of this is the relationship between biomass and soil pH. By creating a scatter plot, we can compute the correlation coefficient, R, and interpret its sign and magnitude, thus determining whether biomass tends to increase or decrease with changes in pH levels. Lastly, leveraging these insights through correlation analysis is crucial for diagnostic purposes. It supports more in-depth data drilling and mining, helping us investigate the root causes of observed trends or anomalies effectively. Let's look at analytic models and their vital components. First, correlation coefficients are essential for quantifying the strength and direction of pairwise associations across variables. They serve as a valuable first pass to flag potential relationships in your data. Next, we have motion charts, which are particularly powerful for visualizing time-aware data with up to 3 variables. These charts animate changes and help track multivariate trends, allowing us to identify emerging anomalies over time. Lastly, the 2D scatter plot is a critical tool for revealing both linear and nonlinear patterns between two variables. By adding color or shape elements, we can encode additional dimensions, enhancing our understanding of the data structure and the relationships present. Let's turn our attention to analytic models and some key visualization techniques. First up, we have the 3D scatter plot. This is an excellent tool for examining simultaneous relationships among 3 continuous variables, providing depth and insight that often goes beyond what 2-dimensional plots can show. Next, consider the ternary diagram, which allows us to assess trade-offs and constraints among 3 components that sum to a whole. This is particularly useful in situations where specific conditions apply, helping us visualize how these elements interact. Lastly, the RV coefficient comes into play when we're comparing multivariate data, enabling us to evaluate the overall similarity between 2 data tables. This comparison is crucial for understanding whether their structures align, guiding where we may want to delve deeper for insights. Let's break down the selection of statistical tools in qualitative univariate analysis. First, we start by building a frequency table. This involves listing each category and counting how many observations fall into it, which helps to summarize the distribution of data effectively. Next, we identify the mode by picking the category with the highest frequency. This represents the most common outcome. To clearly visualize this data, using a bar chart allows for easy comparison of category counts side by side. Alternatively, a pie chart can be employed to showcase each category's share of the whole, emphasizing the composition of our dataset. Remember to conduct quality checks by ensuring that categories are mutually exclusive, clearly labeled, and that the totals match the dataset size. Let's unpack the process of analyzing bivariate data using qualitative methods. First, build a contingency table, which allows us to cross-tabulate counts for every combination of our 2 categorical variables. This table provides a clear picture of joint frequencies at a glance. Next, we need to identify the modal combination by locating the cell with the highest frequency. This reveals the most common pairing of categories. For clarity in presentation, plotting joint categories can be effectively achieved using bar and pie charts. Bar charts facilitate easy comparison, while pie charts illustrate the share of each combination within the total dataset. A practical example includes categorizing customer interactions by channel and satisfaction level, where counts like online high at 42 emerge as the modal combination, reflecting predominant preferences in consumer behavior. Here's what you need to know about selecting statistical tools for mixed data involving both qualitative and quantitative variables. First, when dealing with a binary category, it's essential to use biserial correlation. This method allows you to quantify the strength and direction of the relationship between the binary category and a continuous variable, complementing your visual assessments. For a scenario involving multiple categories, you'll want to compute within-category descriptives, such as the mean, median, and standard deviation, along with the sample size. These metrics will provide a thorough summary of the differences across your categories. Next, visual comparison is critical. Utilize box plots to quickly assess medians, dispersion, and any potential outliers across these groups, facilitating immediate insights into your data. Let's ground this in a concrete example. Consider evaluating whether sepal length varies among three flower species. By calculating per-species descriptives and generating side-by-side box plots, you can effectively identify differences in sepal length and its spread. Finally, as you synthesize this information, remember that combining correlation or group summaries with box plots will help identify key discriminative features. These can serve as valuable inputs for future predictive modeling efforts. Let's break down the fundamental aspects of our analytic approach. First, we need to clearly define our variables and groups. Here, we will use customer group as our categorical variable, while age, class, and salary will be our two quantitative variables, helping us to investigate spending patterns effectively. Moving on, we will construct group scatter plots to visualize our findings. In these plots, we will position spending on the y-axis and age class on the x-axis, using variations in color or size to encode salary. This method will also allow us to facet or group our data by customer group, enhancing clarity in our comparisons. As we analyze these visuals, we will compare behaviors within and across different customer groups. This examination will help us identify differences in trends, spreads, and clusters, thereby revealing the interaction between age and salary on spending. It's equally important to be attentive to outliers and nonlinear patterns that may arise. By pinpointing unusual customer behaviors and examining any curved or segmented relationships in the age-salary bands, we can uncover distinct consumer profiles. Finally, we will translate our visual insights into hypotheses. These testable notions will shed light on how age, class, and salary together influence spending within each customer group, ultimately guiding our ongoing analysis and strategy development. Now let's explore the critical elements of our analytic model. First up, we have regional sales snapshots. These snapshots aggregate sales data by region, product, and period, making it easy to identify top performers and pinpoint areas that need attention. Moving on, we will take a look at the customer dynamics overview. Here, we can track new customers, churned customers, and net additions, which allows us to gauge the health of our portfolio over time. Lastly, let's recap the campaign performance recaps. This involves tabulating exposures, responses, and conversion counts by channel and time frame, helping us assess the overall impact of our marketing efforts. Each of these components plays a vital role in painting a comprehensive picture of our business performance. In this section, we will cover the essential components of our analytic model. First, let's focus on social metrics tabulation. This involves compiling likes, shares, comments, and mentions to quantify our content's reach and engagement. Next, we transition to trend reporting and seasonality, which displays period-over-period changes and moving trends. This helps us identify recurring patterns and shifts in performance over time. Finally, we look at operational dashboards, which provide daily or weekly roll-ups and alerts that keep all stakeholders aligned on recent performance. Together, these elements create a comprehensive view, enabling effective decision-making and strategic planning. In this section, we will explore our analytic model, and its critical components for understanding performance metrics. First, we consider the purpose, which is to uncover the reasons behind changes like revenue drops, shifts in customer behavior, or rising expenses. Then, we shift our focus to root causes, moving beyond just identifying what happened to investigating the underlying factors and interdependencies across various metrics. Next, we dive into data drilling, where we explore granular internal data, such as transaction details and channel performance, to trace back when and where these shifts began. Additionally, we incorporate external context, examining external signals like market conditions and competitor actions to provide a fuller explanation of observed patterns. Finally, the typical outputs of this analysis result in evidence-backed hypotheses, clarifying why the metrics changed and highlighting where to take action next. Let's unpack the analytic model further by examining three critical components that enhance our understanding of performance metrics. First, we engage in data drilling, which allows us to delve into specific dimensions such as region or channel. This helps isolate the segments that significantly influence observed trends and uncovers the root contributors behind those changes. Next, we transition into data mining, where we explore vast data sets to identify patterns and associations. Whether done manually or implemented through machine learning, this step surfaces non-obvious links that could otherwise remain hidden. Finally, we conduct correlation analysis to measure how strongly different variables move together. For instance, by analyzing the relationship between hot days and cold drink sales, we can quantify the strength of this link, providing valuable insights for further investigation. Together, these methods transform our data observations into actionable insights that are evidence-based. Now let's delve into a crucial aspect of our analytic model. First, we need to identify anomalies beyond natural variability. This involves flagging unusual spikes or dips by comparing the outcomes to our established baselines and expected variability, such as seasonality or historical ranges. Next, we focus on discovery by gathering explaining data. This means drilling into internal sources while also pulling in external data, like market trends, weather conditions, or policy changes, to uncover patterns that might shed light on the anomaly. After identifying potential explanations, we evaluate causal relationships. It's essential to test whether these observed associations genuinely drive the anomaly, taking care to guard against confounding factors and the common correlation versus causation trap. To solidify this process, let's consider a quick example. A retailer notices a sudden drop in sales, marking it as an anomaly. They review point-of-sale logs and supply data, along with local events, to gather insights. Eventually, they rule out a price change as the cause and confirm that a stockout was the true driver. Next, let's explore the benefits and drawbacks of diagnostic analytics. One major advantage is its ability to generate insights, as it isolates factors behind both success and failure. However, a key drawback is that findings often rely solely on historical patterns, which may not apply to current situations. Another benefit is its contribution to building a data-driven culture that fosters analytical decision-making, although there's a risk of creating overconfidence in these patterns without appropriate validation. Furthermore, diagnostic analytics enables operational actionability by allowing targeted changes, yet there's a potential for misdirected actions if correlations aren't truly causal. For instance, increasing inventory could improve on-time delivery, but only if the initial analysis correctly identifies that as the root cause. In summary, while diagnostic analytics is excellent for understanding past and present outcomes, it has limitations in forecasting future events, necessitating a complementary approach with predictive analytics for better decision-making. Let's explore the topic of diagnostic analytics across various sectors through concrete examples. In the healthcare sector, we observed a spike in readmissions. To investigate this, a diagnostic question was asked: did rates change with rounding policy or time of discharge? The analysis revealed that a change in rounding policy and late-day discharges correlated with higher readmission rates, prompting necessary adjustments in discharge timing and policies to reduce those readmissions. In retail, there was a sudden surge in tote and reusable bag sales. We posed the question of what external event might align with this spike. This led to the identification of a state ban on plastic shopping bags, which drove the substitution and highlighted the need to align inventory and promotions to meet this new demand. Turning to manufacturing, unexpected machine failures occurred post-maintenance. A relevant diagnostic question was, what changed just before the failures? This allowed us to pinpoint that routine software updates installed the previous day were likely the cause. As a result, steps like rolling back the update and tightening change controls were recommended. Lastly, in human resources, there was notably high turnover on one team. We asked what differs for this team compared to others, which revealed the team's pay was below the industry average. This led to the conclusion that adjusting compensation could improve retention. Through these examples, we see how diagnostic analytics can turn complex data into actionable insights across different sectors. Next up, let's explore the world of analytic models. First, it's essential to understand what predictive analytics entails. This approach utilizes historical data combined with insights from previous descriptive and diagnostic findings to forecast future outcomes and support decision-making. Now, let's discuss some common applications of this method. Organizations leverage predictive analytics to estimate customer lifetime value and recommend the next best product or service. Additionally, it plays a crucial role in generating next quarter sales forecasts, ensuring that businesses stay ahead of demand. Lastly, the effectiveness of predictive analytics hinges on data requirements. It requires large, reliable data sets that are consistently captured across various channels, adhering to uniform collection standards. This foundational aspect ensures that the insights derived are robust and actionable. In this section, we will explore the foundational elements of analytic models. First, we examine the quantitative backbone, which integrates significant past data, statistical knowledge, and clear assumptions. This robust framework ensures that our analyses are based on solid ground. Next, we focus on regression analysis, the primary tool used in this process. This technique allows us to model relationships between variables and make informed predictions about future outcomes. Finally, we consider why this is important. It turns hindsight into foresight, helping businesses take proactive measures in marketing, sales, and customer management. By harnessing these insights, organizations can anticipate customer needs and optimize their strategies effectively. Let's uncover the key aspects of analytic models. First, we consider temporal stability. Forecasts rely on the assumption that historical patterns will continue. However, when trends change, predictions can quickly become unreliable. Next, there's the risk of omitted variables. If we exclude a critical driver from our models, we risk introducing bias. This can lead to outputs that appear accurate but are fragile in real-world scenarios. The 2008 to 2009 financial crisis illustrates this well, as many models failed to account for the possibility of falling housing prices, leading to significant errors. To combat these pitfalls, continuous monitoring is essential. Analysts and managers must keep a vigilant eye on data and market conditions to detect when initial assumptions are no longer valid. Lastly, managerial diligence is vital. Teams should openly discuss model assumptions and prepare for potential failures by establishing clear response plans in advance. This proactive approach can help organizations navigate uncertainty effectively. Let's delve into the concept of analytic models. First, they serve as powerful techniques that analyze historical data using statistical algorithms to predict future events or actions. The key here is that patterns learned from past data allow organizations to generate forecasts for new, unseen cases. Various families of models, including regression, decision trees, and neural networks, are commonly employed to map inputs to predicted outcomes. This capability is essential. It enables early data-driven decisions for planning, risk mitigation, and resource allocation. Furthermore, analytic models find cross-industry applications, proving useful in areas such as customer behavior, demand planning, and enhancing operational efficiency across different sectors. Let's break down the essentials of analytic models. First, data collection is critical. Gather high-quality historical data that accurately reflects the problem space, while minimizing noise and bias. Next, move to feature selection. This involves identifying and retaining informative variables while removing any redundant or irrelevant features, enhancing the model's learning and generalization capabilities. After that, we focus on model selection, ensuring that we align the right algorithms to the data and the specific task at hand. For example, we use regression for continuous outcomes, decision trees or random forests for identifying non-linear patterns, ARIMA for time series analysis, and neural networks when dealing with complex relationships. Then we examine training and testing by splitting the data into training and testing sets, enabling us to fit our models and validate their performance on unseen data. Finally, evaluation metrics come into play. It's essential to choose the appropriate metrics for the task, be it accuracy, precision, or recall for classification, or mean absolute error for regression, ensuring we measure success in a way that reflects the objectives and costs relevant to the business context. Let's unpack the concepts of analytic models, focusing on four key areas. First, we start with customer retention, specifically addressing churn. By analyzing usage patterns, tenure, support tickets, and feedback, we can identify at-risk customers. Advanced techniques like logistic regression or decision trees allow us to trigger targeted outreach and proactive offers aimed at keeping those customers engaged. Moving on to sales forecasting, we can enhance our understanding of demand by integrating factors such as seasonality, promotions, pricing strategies, and current market trends. Utilizing regression or tree-based models helps us optimize inventory levels, staffing requirements, and budgeting decisions. Next, we tackle risk management, specifically regarding fraud and credit evaluation. By examining transaction patterns and credit histories, we can estimate the likelihood of fraud or defaults. Classification trees, logistic regression, and neural networks are crucial in driving alerts and setting underwriting limits to mitigate risks effectively. Finally, in terms of healthcare outcomes, predicting readmissions or complications becomes vital. By utilizing patient histories, vital signs, lab results, and treatment data, we can apply regression decision trees or neural networks to personalize care plans and monitoring strategies, ultimately improving patient outcomes. Now let's delve into the comparison of predictive model families, specifically focusing on decision trees, regression, and neural networks. First, decision trees split decisions into simple, understandable rules. They are best utilized for quick decisions, where clear logic is paramount. Their strengths lie in being easy to understand and dissect, making them very user-friendly. However, they may prioritize speed and clarity at the expense of capturing complex relationships in data. Next, regression quantifies linear relationships between inputs and outcomes. This approach is ideal for situations where there's an approximately linear relationship present. Its strengths include widespread use in statistical analysis with results that are straightforward to interpret. Yet regression can be limited when relationships deviate from linearity. Finally, we have neural networks, which excel in capturing complex nonlinear patterns. They are particularly suited for predictive tasks involving intricate data relationships or when the underlying formulas are not known. Their key strength lies in pattern recognition and prediction, though they tend to provide better predictions than explanations, which may be a limitation in scenarios requiring transparency. In summary, each model family has its unique advantages and drawbacks, making it essential to choose the right one based on your specific analytical needs. Understanding regression is essential for grasping how variables interact in analysis. The primary purpose here is to quantify the impact of independent variables on a dependent variable, which helps us explain and predict outcomes effectively. Then we differentiate between single and multiple regression. Single linear regression utilizes one predictor, whereas multiple regression involves two or more predictors for a more nuanced analysis. As we build our models, a critical aspect lies in understanding the fitted line, like the equation y equals 20 plus 8x. Here, 20 represents the intercept, or the baseline when x is 0, while 8 indicates how much y changes per unit increase in x. This foundation sets the stage for more complex analysis and predictions in the coming sections. In this section, we will cover essential components of regression analysis that enhance our predictive efforts. First, when we plug in values of x, we can estimate y and use our model to forecast new outcomes. However, it's important to recognize that predictions are not always perfect due to various factors at play. This is where the error term comes into play. Including an error term allows us to acknowledge unexplained variation and measurement noise, making our predictions more robust. Additionally, model development is not a one-time event, it is an iterative process. We must continuously evaluate the fit of our model and refine variables or specifications to improve accuracy over time. This cycle of refinement ensures our models adapt and remain relevant as new data emerges. Let's delve into the important concept that correlation doesn't imply causation. A classic example is the relationship between air conditioner sales and rising temperatures. While it may seem that higher temperatures drive AC sales, the truth is that it's the heat itself that fuels demand, not the other way around. Now, consider the link between travel and weight gain. It might appear that frequent travel contributes to increasing weight, but the reality is that the true factors at play are decreased exercise levels, richer dining options, and social gatherings during trips. As we evaluate these instances, it's crucial to investigate the mechanisms behind every correlation we encounter. Always strive to identify a credible link that connects any given factor to its corresponding outcome before drawing conclusions about causation. Lastly, it's essential to remain vigilant as a manager. Approach correlations as hints or indicators, and ensure you verify any cause and effect relationships before making decisions based on predictions or changes in policy. Now let's delve into an essential aspect of analytical modeling, statistical significance. This concept indicates whether a finding is unlikely to result from random variation, thus enhancing our confidence that the effect we observe is genuine. However, it's crucial to recognize that statistical significance doesn't equate to practical value. A result might be statistically significant, yet too small to be impactful in real-world applications. Fortunately, most statistical software provides tool support, automatically reporting significance alongside output, making it easier for us to interpret results. Moreover, for those who prefer working in Excel, there's an accessible formula to compute statistical significance for common analyses. Ultimately, understanding these significance metrics is vital for informed decision-making, allowing us to base our choices on reliable data and strengthening our analytical approaches. Let's break down the importance of analytic modeling. First, more accurate and reliable forecasts are essential for effective decision-making. Predictive models enhance our ability to project demand, traffic, and revenue, significantly reducing uncertainty in planning processes. Next, consider inventory optimization in retail. Retailers can accurately forecast stock requirements, minimizing both stockouts and overstock situations, which drastically improves product availability and cash flow. Now let's shift our focus to pricing optimization in airlines and hospitality. By leveraging data, airlines can set appropriate ticket prices, while hotels and restaurants can project guest volumes, aligning pricing and capacity with actual demand. Furthermore, improved marketing ROI and customer value are direct benefits of these models. By targeting campaigns more effectively, businesses see increased response rates and purchases, enhancing both acquisition efficiency and customer retention. Lastly, we cannot overlook the capability for early detection of criminal or anomalous behaviors. Using predictive models, organizations can identify patterns associated with credit card fraud, corporate espionage, and cyber attacks, allowing them to act swiftly and minimize losses. Let's explore real-world benefits of predictive analytics in three significant domains: manufacturing forecasting, credit scoring, and insurance underwriting. In manufacturing forecasting, time series models effectively analyze historical demand, lead times, seasonality, and the impact of promotions. This enables companies to optimize their supply chain and resource utilization, aligning production with current demand to significantly reduce stockouts and excess inventory. Next, in credit scoring, predictive scoring models utilize borrower history, repayment behavior, credit inquiries, and utilization to streamline lending processes. This creates faster, more consistent lending decisions while effectively managing default risk, a practice exemplified by CIBIL in India. Finally, in insurance underwriting, actuaries leverage demographic data, claims history, exposure factors, and lifestyle elements. By applying actuarial risk models to compare applicants against risk pools, insurers achieve accurate risk-based pricing and maintain a balanced portfolio. These practical applications demonstrate how predictive analytics transforms operational and financial decisions across various industries. Let's delve into the fascinating benefits of predictive analytics across various sectors, starting with marketing. In this domain, businesses can adapt to demographic shifts and market reactions, allowing them to refine their product mix, timing, and targeting strategies to elevate customer engagement. Moving to finance, predictive analytics plays a vital role in forecasting future cash flows. By utilizing historical sales data, revenue, and expense records, along with industry benchmarks, organizations can confidently plan their liquidity, investments, and risk buffers. Next, in entertainment and hospitality, predictive models assist in anticipating staffing needs, such as hotel check-ins, through multiple regression analysis. This involves analyzing bookings, seasonality, local events, and historical check-in data. An exemplary case is Caesars, which effectively scheduled staff to avoid overstaffing while ensuring top-notch service. Overall, these insights from predictive analytics empower organizations to make informed decisions and implement strategies that optimize their operations. Let's delve into the remarkable benefits of predictive analytics, particularly focusing on behavioral targeting, manufacturing, and healthcare. In the realm of marketing, businesses employ consumer clickstream data, purchase history, and engagement patterns to develop propensity scores and next best offer predictions. This valuable insight allows them to serve personalized ads and offers in real time, significantly boosting conversion rates and reducing customer acquisition costs. Shifting to manufacturing, algorithms utilize sensor telemetry, error logs, and maintenance history to determine failure probability and remaining useful life. This information guides companies to schedule maintenance, recommend fixes, and optimize equipment settings, resulting in less unplanned downtime and lower maintenance expenses. Lastly, within the healthcare sector, wearable biosignal technology monitors critical health indicators and symptom trends. This leads to early predictions of severe conditions, prompting immediate alerts to caregivers and even automated actions like administering epinephrine when necessary. These interventions ensure rapid responses, ultimately reducing adverse health outcomes. Let's dive into the real-world applications of predictive analytics across various sectors. In banking and financial services, predictive models are instrumental in fraud detection, credit risk scoring, and ensuring customer retention through tailored offers. This proactive approach helps reduce fraud losses, improve lending decisions, and ultimately enhance customer loyalty. Shifting to the retail sector, predictive analytics plays a crucial role in optimizing merchandise planning and pricing strategies while enabling targeted promotions. This not only right-sizes inventory, but also increases profit margins and boosts campaign conversion rates. In the oil, gas, and utilities sector, predictive analytics forecasts equipment failures and resource requirements, allowing companies to proactively address maintenance needs and mitigate safety risks. This minimizes downtime, optimizes maintenance schedules, and enhances overall safety and reliability. Lastly, within governments and the public sector, leveraging census data provides critical insights for better compliance, tax fraud detection, and service delivery enhancements. This strategic use of predictive models helps improve adherence to regulations, target interventions effectively, and elevate the quality of services provided to citizens. Let's unpack the concept of analytic modeling in marketing. Firstly, it involves systematically tracking and analyzing data from marketing efforts to achieve clear, quantitative goals. This meticulous approach is crucial because it empowers organizations with valuable insights that can significantly enhance customer experiences, improve return on investment, and inform future marketing strategies. Notably, a 2022 report by PwC reveals that companies that leverage data effectively are 3 times more likely to experience substantial improvements in decision-making. Ultimately, this process transforms marketing results into actionable guidance, equipping teams with the insights needed for refining campaigns and optimizing performance for future initiatives. When it comes to analytic models, the first step is to clearly define the question or hypothesis you wish to explore. This focus will guide your data collection efforts and comparisons, ensuring you gather meaningful insights about customer behavior or performance. From there, it's essential to design and deploy effective surveys. Whether you choose multi-question formats or a simple Net Promoter Score item, these tools will help you capture direct feedback on customer attitudes. Once you have your data, it's time to run an A/B test. By creating a control and a test group, manipulating just one variable, you can evaluate the outcomes and assess the validity of your hypothesis. This structured approach enables you to refine your strategies based on real evidence. To truly understand our audience and content performance, we need to track organic content interactions. This means logging engagements across various platforms, such as blog posts, emails, social media posts, podcasts, and videos. Next, we'll turn our attention to paid efforts, where measuring ad engagements by their funnel stage is crucial. Recording when individuals interact with your digital ads provides insights on their journey through the marketing funnel. Once we have both organic and paid data, we can combine and map insights. By aligning survey responses, A/B testing outcomes, and interaction data to their sources and respective funnel stages, we gain a clearer picture for comparison. Finally, it's essential to decide and iterate on our findings. By prioritizing the messages, formats, and placements that perform the best, we can refine those elements that aren't resonating with our audience. Understanding how we analyze data in marketing is essential for leveraging insights effectively. First, we aggregate and structure in-platform data using analytics and social tools, such as Google Analytics and HubSpot. These systems allow us to consolidate metrics by channel, campaign, and audience, giving us a comprehensive view of our performance. When further scrutiny is needed, we can export for deeper analysis, downloading datasets to Microsoft Excel or statistical programs for advanced visualizations and testing relationships. Next, we aim to improve user experience by identifying friction points and optimizing user journeys based on behavior patterns revealed in our aggregated reports. Additionally, computing marketing ROI is crucial. By applying a consistent formula, we can effectively evaluate the efficiency of our spend across various campaigns and channels. Lastly, we plan future strategies by translating our findings into actionable insights, guiding budget allocation, channel mix, and content focus for ongoing experimentation. Let's turn our attention to predictive analytics tools, specifically focusing on SAS, IBM SPSS, and RapidMiner Studio. If you're looking for a robust, versatile suite from a leading analytics provider, SAS Advanced Analytics stands out. It's recognized for its comprehensive capabilities, but does not disclose pricing upfront. On the other hand, IBM SPSS offers a flexible statistical platform that effectively handles both structured and unstructured data, with various deployment options, including cloud, on-premises, and hybrid solutions. For those who need a seamless environment for both data preparation and analysis, RapidMiner Studio is an excellent choice, featuring automated reporting and over 60 native integrations, along with specialized extensions for tasks like anomaly detection and text processing. This comparison allows you to align your specific needs, whether in data types, deployment options, or integration capabilities, with what each tool excels in. Now, let's contrast three predictive analytics tools, TIBCO Spotfire, H2O, and PSPP. TIBCO Spotfire is known for its core strength in providing one-click predictions that offer real-time visual insights, making it perfect for analysts who need instant results. In contrast, H2O is an open-source solution that boasts a fast and feature-rich engine, appealing to experienced data scientists who prioritize performance. On the other hand, PSPP serves as a free and open-source suite, covering common analytics tasks and catering especially to learners and practitioners seeking accessible statistical analysis. Notable features of TIBCO Spotfire include auto-forecasting and real-time updates, while H2O stands out with its high speed and advanced workflows. Lastly, PSPP is best suited for users looking to conduct everyday statistical analyses without encountering cost barriers. A key concept here is the analytic model. Its main purpose is to identify the best course of action for any given scenario by utilizing available data. It's not just about predicting what may happen, but also discerning what actions we should take next. To achieve this, the model leverages both descriptive summaries of past performance and predictive forecasts as its foundational inputs, forming a robust base for decision recommendations. The decision core focuses on optimization techniques, allowing us to balance various objectives and constraints while selecting the next best action. This comprehensive approach ensures that our decisions are not only informed, but also strategically sound, paving the way for effective outcomes. In this section, we delve into the foundational aspects of decision making. First up is decision rules, which utilize rule-based logic to encode policies, thresholds, and business guidelines that shape our choices. This ensures that our recommendations not only comply with regulations, but are feasible and strategically aligned. Next, we look at recommendations. This component generates actionable guidance, providing ranked options, or even pinpointing the single best action tailored specifically to the current context. Finally, we explore the learning feedback loop. This vital process continuously updates the mapping from actions to outcomes, allowing the system to enhance its recommendations over time, thus ensuring smarter decisions in the future. Overall, these interconnected elements form a robust analytic model that drives effective outcomes, empowering businesses to apply prescriptive analytics in real-world scenarios to make optimal, data-driven decisions that enhance efficiency and performance. Let's turn our attention to how prescriptive analytics is actively shaping decision-making in two specific domains, venture capital and sales. In the realm of venture capital, the emphasis is on selecting which startups to fund and determining the appropriate size of investments. This process hinges on a careful analysis of startup metrics, market signals, founder history, and established risk-return thresholds. The power of prescriptive analytics comes into play as it ranks potential deals, suggests appropriate check sizes or terms, and flags areas needing diligence attention. This approach leads to higher hit rates, a disciplined allocation of resources, and a reduction in bias throughout the investment process. Switching gears to sales, the focus shifts to the prioritization of leads for representatives and defining their next best actions. Here, inputs such as firmographics, engagement signals, past conversions, and the current deal stage are critically analyzed. The prescriptive models score leads, route them efficiently to the right representatives, and initiate personalized outreach cadences. As a result, businesses experience faster pipeline velocity, improved conversion rates, and more efficient use of representative time, enhancing overall sales effectiveness. Now let's explore the applications of prescriptive analytics in content curation, banking, and product management. Starting with content curation, the goal is to sustain user engagement and session time. To achieve this, algorithms analyze user behavior, including views, clicks, dwell time, as well as content metadata, considering factors like recency and frequency. This drives recommendations for next content scheduling posts and personalizing feeds. Shifting to banking, the focus is on preventing losses by intercepting suspicious activity. Typical data inputs include transaction amount, time, location, merchant category, and customer profile, allowing for swift action. Here, prescriptive analytics might flag or hold transactions, initiate step-up authentication, or route cases for investigation. Finally, in product management, the objective is to guide the feature roadmap and improvements. This is informed by usage analytics, feedback through NPS, churn signals, and results from A/B testing. The outcome is the prioritization of features, allocation of resources, and targeted rollouts to maximize impact, such as rolling out a fix for checkout speed to high-value cohorts. This reveals a consistent pattern, gathering relevant signals, applying decision logic, and producing actionable directives aligned with business goals. Let's delve into the realm of prescriptive analytics within marketing, transportation, and financial markets. In marketing and sales, it focuses on optimal product bundling and pricing. This approach allows for actions like recommending product pairs, suggesting price points and discounts, and prioritizing customer segments to ultimately drive higher average order value and conversion rates. Transitioning to the transportation sector, prescriptive analytics enhances cost-effective delivery and route planning. It recommends efficient routes and schedules while allocating loads and capacities, even adjusting routes dynamically by utilizing shipper data. This leads to lower fuel and handling costs, as well as improvements in on-time delivery. Finally, in financial markets, prescriptive analytics plays a critical role in position sizing, hedging, and transaction cost minimization. It aids in decisions about trade size, whether to skip trades, propose hedges, and schedule orders, all with the goal of improving risk-adjusted returns and reducing trading costs. Through these examples, we see how prescriptive analytics translates data into actionable recommendations that can significantly enhance business outcomes. To excel in your analytic modeling efforts, it's essential to establish reliable, real-time data pipelines. This means ingesting, cleaning, and refreshing your data, ensuring that models operate with accurate and up-to-date information. Next, frame the decision you wish to make by defining the key performance indicators that align with your goals. This clarity will ensure that the recommendations you generate are focused and actionable. Furthermore, engineer features from business signals. Transforming raw data into model-ready features enables your analysis to capture the critical levers at play. Doing so will empower your models to deliver insights that genuinely reflect your business environment. Let's explore the analytic model and its critical components. First, it's essential to select algorithms that are aligned with your assumptions. For instance, utilizing a Bayes classifier allows you to compute conditional probabilities, while the ID3 algorithm helps build decision trees based on information gain. Next, focus on quantifying the outcomes of candidate actions. This involves evaluating potential decisions by estimating their effects on key performance indicators before taking any action, which helps in recommending the best options. Lastly, monitoring data quality and preventing overfitting is crucial. This means applying data quality standards, tracking drift, and ensuring that you retrain your model whenever the signals or behaviors change. Each of these steps serves to enhance the efficacy of your analytic model, paving the way for informed decision-making. Let's review what we've covered in this lesson about analytic models. We began with descriptive analytics, which emphasizes understanding key measures such as mean, median, mode, and variability, allowing us to summarize data effectively. Next, we explored diagnostic analytics, focusing on techniques like data drilling and correlation analysis to identify patterns and relationships within datasets. This leads us to predictive analytics, where we learned how forecasting and modeling can help us predict future trends and behaviors based on historical data. Then we discussed prescriptive analytics, which provides actionable recommendations that guide decision-making based on the insights gleaned from previous analyses. Finally, we touched on the selection and application of statistical tools, which are essential for analyzing various types of data effectively. With this foundation, you're prepared to apply these concepts in real-world scenarios as you continue your journey in data analytics.